Hello, everyone. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic, and this is episode 601. I am, there was something that I used to do a long time ago on my other recordings, Quasi-Indefatigable Zenilith, and I stopped doing it after a while because I thought it was a little mean, but I might get back to it. And I hope you know that I would be doing it because it's a little bit of a... No, it's not a satire. It's well, yeah. Yeah, I guess it is. When I started, I would usually... start with greetings to cows. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people like being called cows. Luckily, I don't think very many people listen to those early recordings. That was back in like 2003 or 2004, somewhere in there. That actually came from earlier philosophizing I've done on, you can call it work. I guess I go at it with the kind of passion that one would do a work with, so you can call it work. It was earlier work I had done because I was comparing schools. My favorite whipping boy, because I'm sorry, it touches all of us, and I think it does damage to all of us. No matter how well you try to execute, no matter how well you try to pull the badness out of it, it's still going to put in some interesting ideas that are going to cause problems. We're going to cause problems. Being a non-statist as I am, a non-nationalist, a person that just kind of says, you know what, please don't put that label on me. I don't even like the label Christian very much. I'm not anti-Christian. I try to be a follower of Jesus Christ, but the term Christian doesn't have much to do with being a follower of Jesus Christ. It has more to do with being part of a group and having a certain mindset and certain things that you hold in common. And many of those things have nothing to do with what Jesus Christ ever taught or ever believed or ever told anybody else to believe either. So I guess in that term, I guess I am a non-Christian. I am a follower of, I am trying to be a follower of Jesus Christ. Anyway, so that's still kind of blowover from the last thing. I came up with the cow thing because I started to kind of veer away from an idea that a lot of people have come up with, which I think is a pretty fair assessment of saying that schools are like prisons. And I said, no, because prisons aren't really trying to produce a product. Schools are trying to produce a product, but it's usually different than what you think. And what I came up with as an analogy, I still like it. I don't use it very much, but I like it because I think it offends people more. Even then, the whole prison idea, you know, your kids are in prison, and, you know, people can usually poo-poo that for the simple reason that, you know, well, my kid's not in prison. They come home every night, do their homework, go to bed so they can wake up in the morning and go back to the salt mine. I think our old thing, the kids used to call it going to a salt mine. I think that's good. I still call school salt mines. That's how my kids know that I do that. And I do it freely, and I do it happily. Going back to the old salt mines, huh? My kids don't want to be in school. The few who are still left in school, except for Matthew. But that's because Matthew has a great need to be doing what he's supposed to be doing. That's really important. And I'm sorry, school doesn't touch Matt. Luckily, doesn't even try to touch Matt because he's special ed. And because they think nothing's going through, they don't bother talking to Matt about the kind of things that they often talk to kids about. Kind of indoctrination stuff. Anyway, so I'd come up with this whole thing that I thought schools were most like stockyards, cattle stockyards. Now that's something that a lot of people don't have experience with, and I won't say that I have tons of experience. I've lived next to them. They smell bad. I equate a stockyard with a boys' locker room at school, because just the press of having a lot of young, sweaty, zip-faced kids all crammed into one room, sweating all over each other, you know, it's going to smell like testosterone and piss and, you know, and everything else boys tend to be composed of. That's, you know, that's honest, you know. They haven't gotten good yet aiming at the toilet. They, you know, they haven't, you know, they kind of have this sick, freaky way of making fun of each other when they're naked, you know, comparing size and shape and stuff like that. Evil. I didn't learn about circumcision until it was brought up in a boy's locker room, because, of course, you can see one of their penises and figure out that some of them have foreskin and some don't. Ugh. Sorry, I don't mean to bring up that topic. I don't consider this particularly a family podcast. I don't want to get gross. But it's anatomy. It's there. What are you going to do with it? You know, and boys are going to talk about all kinds of garbage. And do it in those settings. Even though I had one school superintendent, I laughed in his face. He was probably the first school superintendent in my town that I felt like I had no obligation to give him any respect at all, although he demanded it. You know, he loved to call himself doctor. I am doctor this, and I'm sorry, I didn't respect... He wasn't a respectable person, therefore, the fact that he had his Ed D, I think, I don't think brought any honor to the title, you know. And he did. I'm Dr. William Reitz. Of course, I just called him Bill because that's what his mother called him. And that's what his friends called him, was Bill. So I called Bill, too. And he was just... He was a funny guy. He was one of these guys that tried to act like a real power broker, a real overlord, and he would use some of the overlord tactics that he had learned. One of the big ones was you have to confuse people. And, of course, it's so much easier to confuse people when you can give off this air of being intelligent. He never gave off that air. He gave off the air of being kind of a mafia boss, something of a thug. And, you know, I was somewhat worried about doing anything to him, because I'm afraid he'd do a gangland slaying at my house or come after my kids. You know, and I'm the kind of guy that says, hey, if the powerful want to grasp and grope for power, I'm going to let them, because I have trust. This is another thing that's true. I have a trust in God that God will handle all these things. There's no gangland slaying going on in front of God's house. So I'm going to let him fix those kinds of problems. I'm going to do what I can for my family, for my kids. I'm not going to go out and start telling people that we need to start killing the bad people or start locking them up or something like that. That's not what I'm after. And I'm not going to do that particularly. All right. At all. Because I'm a non-person, not an anti-person. I'm not going to get militant against anything. It's just going to be me. That's why one of my great idols is Sir Thomas More. And I'll call him Saint Thomas More. I am not Catholic. He was a statesman. No, he wasn't a statesman. He was a person of great principle and great honor, in my view. And he stood up for what he thought I was right. He wasn't trying to overthrow government. He wasn't trying to eliminate evil. He wasn't trying to do any of those things. He was trying to live and let live. He just wanted to live the way he wanted to live, with the kind of honor he wanted to live with. Of course, he wasn't allowed to. They chopped his head off for it. But that's what happens, you know. He wasn't going to be a martyr. People have set him up as a martyr. I don't look at him as a martyr. A martyr for what cause? Cause of truth? and you know, well, he was a martyr. I don't tend to honor martyrs particularly. I don't think dying for something is very good. I'm much more useful to my family if I'm alive. I can provide for them a whole lot better. So I'm not interested in dying in the service of some principle if it makes my family starve. Now, he didn't have a choice. He didn't have a choice. It was either I stop being an honorable person or I'm going to die. He chose to be an honorable person. But it was really obvious that while he was going through all this, if there was any way he could slip out of that and be able to appease the powers that be, yet still keep his honor, he would have taken it in a second. He wasn't making a statement against the king. He didn't, he was going to do those things. I don't think the state's a good idea, but I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to fight the will of the people. Of course, I don't think people are really expressing a will. I think they're just following along. But, I would love for people to have their eyes wide open when they do these kinds of things. And how did I get from cows to that? Anyway, so, all right, well, I don't think I even got down to what Reap said that really bugged me. His thing was, it sounds bad in the press when people say you're teaching to the test. So he said, we're not teaching to the test, we're teaching toward the test. And I laughed at him. I said, now that's a semantical argument there, a semantic argument, an argument of semantics. If we're going to talk about semantics, I'm trying to put my stuff together so it sounds right. There you go, but that's just words. It's exactly the same thing. It still results in the same thing. All of your teaching goes toward making sure people pass tests. Of course, now it doesn't do that so much. Teachers do pretty much, teach pretty much what they've always taught. And then when it gets close to testing time, they're supposed to drop that and pick up, cramming. And that's what they do. And the reason why they do it is because it works, You can pass almost any test if you cram for it for a couple of weeks. If that's all you talk about all the time is a little bit about test-taking skills, but a whole lot about, here are the answers to the questions on the test. Shove them in your head so that when you need to have them, you can spit them out. And everybody locks up their tests so you can't see what they are. So you can't see what the answers are, but based on what they saw in the test before, they can guess what the test is going to be somewhat like this year. They don't change the test every year. It's too expensive. Anyway, so he was trying to tout all that, which is typical overlord speak for, I'm going to do exactly what you don't want me to do, but I'm just going to change the phrasing a little bit so I can placate you. And if I feel confident enough, I'll go ahead and tell you exactly what I'm going to do. But I'm going to try to color it so that you'll come along with me and say that it's a wonderful thing. It comes to race baiting, class envy, stuff like that. It really doesn't matter. Anyway, let's get back to the cows in the stockyard. Cows in the stockyard are done for one purpose. You're trying to get cows ready for slaughter. That's what cows are for. You breed cows to make them better for slaughter. Either more docile, usually bigger, but not always, because some things are really good. Some cows are very, have a less of a tendency to be high strung, tear up fences, which makes your cost of raising them to go to slaughter less. Ranchers spend an inordinate amount of time fixing fences to keep their cows in. They spend an inordinate amount of time marking their cattle to make sure you know who those cows belong to. But that's to a product. That's why I like the idea of a stockyard. Schools compared to stockyards, schools to prisons. prisons are more like, we're just incarcerating you for a certain amount of time. Not that that's not true of schools. I mean, it's a 12-year incarceration, 13, going for 14, 15, whenever they can get a chance. You know, your sentence has been extended because your crimes are getting worse. You know? That's kind of what it ends up being. I'm not saying that the school is prison idea isn't a valid one. I'm saying that there's also a whole other facet to it. School is trying to produce a product. Now, the big question is, what product is it trying to produce? The one that's talented is a smart, intelligent, you know, person who can go out and make a good living. You know, and that one also has a smattering of the overlords actually telling you the truth a little bit. It isn't about making your kid smart. It's about making your kid a valuable worker. You know? And a whole lot of people don't have a problem with that. They want to be a valuable worker. They tend to get compensated pretty good for being a valuable worker. And if that's all that school is about, spending 12 years doing it seems like a bad investment because, frankly, I can tell you from homeschooling my children, or having seen my children homeschooled by my wife, that you can put a lot less effort into it and get just as good a results. Schools schools spend a lot of time taking credit for stuff for which they have no influence. You know, if there's some really, really smart kid, you know, if the next Albert Einstein went to your high school, they will probably rename the school after that kid, and they will tout the fact that this is a marvelous school because it produced this kid, and schools don't produce anything. Kids have to endure school. That's like saying Charles Manson was the product of whatever prisons he went to. Actually, I think that might be more true. But you know, schools only produce things in the negative, you know. If there's all these college shootings that go on, you know, these guys go in, they are frustrated, and whatever their mental state is when they do it, they go and they shoot 30 or 40 kids, and then they pull the gun on themselves and kill themselves. And, you know, people are always talking about, oh, well, what were the causes of this? Of course, school never comes up. It's always about society is alienated them, which is, strangely enough, school. When you go to a school for eight hours a day, 5 days a week for the first 18 years of your life, you know who's affecting you most? Schools. And you can say, well, if he would have been more better schooled, he wouldn't have done this. And you go, not necessarily so. This may have been his reaction to school. He may have turned to something more evil. I'm going by some cows right now. These are not stockyard cows at the moment. They might have started in a stockyard. They might end in a stockyard. Anyway, but they're not there now. But they've got their little tags on, just like your kid does. Your kid carries around their little paperwork, their little baggage from school for the rest of life, just like an ear tag on a cow. Now, if you're not familiar with cows, this, you know, you'll be lost to some of this imagery. Stockyards serve several purposes, never the purposes of cows, of course. We don't know what cows care about, love, and hate. We only know cows in our ability to profit off them. You know, that's what ranchers do, is profit off cows. I'm not calling them bad people. You know, I don't know how the cow feels. For all I know, the cow doesn't feel much at all. His purpose is for just standing side of beef type stuff. You know, that's fine. I don't, a lot of things are done, you know. We harvest the bounty of the earth, and we've decided that it's important to profit off of these things. You know, it's important to have turned this into commerce. I think it's kind of sad. I think we should have done something different. But, you know. But it does work in a way because it frees up people from having to constantly, oh, this is a washboard road. I will hold this thing up higher because my little recorder will go ballistic if it gets shaken too much. So I will use my body as a sink for this washboardedness. If you don't live in a rural area, you might not understand anything I'm talking about. But if you do, like I do, these things make some sense. You know, the whole point of stockyards is to produce the most beef as inexpensively as possible. And, you know, there's all kinds of different theories on why that's so. There are starter stockyards, and there are finishing stockyards. Most of the cows in the middle tend to be more the free-range type, at least around here. I don't know if in some other places cows live in stockyards their entire life, probably. I don't know. But those are all different philosophies. I don't know all the stuff about it. I know cattle experts, and I guess I could ask them how they feel about it or what they're thinking of why we go in this direction or in that direction. It's always toward that product. That's what stockyards are there for, you know. Either more meat on the hook or more docile cows, or cows that you can concentrate more cows into a certain area. You know, and this is all studied, and cows are bred to be more compliant or to be more meaty or whatever particular trait the stockman wants to get, because he's going to try and profit off of that trade. And that's what schools do too. Schools aren't interested in anything particularly about the individual child. Teachers may take an interest in individual children. Even administrators may take interest. But by and large, the actual school itself, the institution, could care less, which is indicated by the fact that, especially in places like No Child Left Behind, it's not about the individual kids. It's about the collective test score of a school. A school is either passing or failing. It's given a grade. Failing schools get more assistance or get punished more, depending on what philosophy you come from. If you should punish failure, hoping that it will produce better results, or if you try to socialize that failure and try to throw money at it as if money could solve it, and maybe it can in some cases. I don't know. See, and what happens is it's those kinds of big picture attitudes. You know, we're going to throw more money at it, and that'll fix it, or that'll improve it. We're not really looking at fixing, we're just looking at improvements, incremental things. We'll punish them, and it'll stop that behavior. And when you take that and see, that ends up getting applied to individuals. That's the dehumanizing things of the state, of institutions, of things like that. It's that whole sick, twisted thing. It's taking those kinds of attitudes and devolving it down to individuals. You know, I'm going to punish this child and it'll make them perform better. Because we've learned that lots of kids in the aggregate, you know, we can get a 2%, you know, performance increase by whipping kids, you know. And so when you do it to one kid, you expect a 2% increase in that kid. It doesn't take into account individual variation, of course. When you have a large group, you don't have to consider individual variation. When you have the individual, it becomes all important. But that's funny, because people take those same attitudes and you bring them to these things. That's what happens when you have the fallacy of parents using the same techniques of parenting or of training their children on all their children, no matter what they are, you know. I don't understand it. Johnny's older brother, I used to whip him, and boy, that brought him into shape. And I whipped Johnny, and he just doesn't react the way I want him to it. So what do? Oh, I whip him more. And you go, you might try a different tactic. And I'm not the person that says that we're going to find the best tactic for each individual. You can find something that works for the aggregate or works better for the aggregate. But we find that in order to do that, you have to have more of a group person. You have to have people that tend to move more as groups, not as individuals. And that's what schools do. That's what stockyards do, too. Because they don't want to have to fret with the individual needs of cows. Who cares? They're going to get turned into meat anyway. We just want to get the maximum meat for the minimum amount of time, effort, and money thrown into it. That's the whole point. When it becomes a commercial thing, school does an excellent job of turning child rearing, making of human beings into something of a commercial, institutional I can't believe I'm on a roll and I died trying to come up with the right word. Endeavor. And it feels that way, so you have to have a goal. And the goal ultimately ends up being to produce uniform, well-acculturated children that will behave the way we want them to behave, that when we do this particular social technique to them, they will react as expected. We kind of like something akin to lab rats. We want them to behave the way we expect them to behave. Kind of, you know. Anyway, so that's what schools are there to do, is to produce this kind of a person. A cow. So when I used to tell people, "Good morning, cows," as the start of my recordings way back when, even though it was somewhat offensive, I think that's what everybody was ultimately kind of becoming. That's what the school wants you to be, too. They would like it very much if your test score, if you tested better. It's kind of like government grading of beef. There's choice, there's prime, stuff like, you know, it's kind of funny because prime has nothing to do with lean, and people always think, oh, it must be leaner and better, and you go, no, it's not. It came from an old-timey thing where meat was more tender if there was more marbling in it, which is actually fat in with the muscle that you're using. You know, that's better marbling. And I'm sorry, it tastes a whole bunch better. Oh, it's so good. But it's not healthy at all. But who cares? You know, I guess somebody would love to come up with a lean meat they've tried. You know, there's fake fat out there. I don't know how they're going to inject it into cows particularly, but I'm sure they'll try to find a way so they can call it prime and have it be lower fat, the best of both worlds. Anyway, that kind of grading, you know, they don't care about the individual cow except to put them into compliance. They want all their cows to be prime grade cows. Every school wants all of their kids to be grade A or grade B. You know, B's and A's. I made A's and B's. Hee-hee! And the funny thing is now parents are so acculturated to it, too. They actually live for that. I was talking to a guy. He pays his grandson $5 for every A he brings home from school. Now, ultimately, you know what? Honestly, your grades in school have nothing to do with your ultimate success. I find it funny. Of course, there's all kinds of statistics that say, in the aggregate, people who make better grades make better money, but by and large, that's because certain decent paid careers are only open to those who have done decently in school. People who don't make A's and B's in school don't tend to go to college. And, you know, if you make sure that only college people who went to college make better money, well, then, yeah, the system does work. And that's been important. It's very important, you know, just like it's very important that for cows, prime meat needs to cost more. People need to be willing to pay more. So you market prime meat as premium, tastes better, better for this thing and for that thing, and worth more, people pay more, there it works. That's like school, too. People say that people are, you know, there's marketing by the education people that you want to hire people with better grades because they're, quote-unquote, better workers, better people, stuff like that. And so you're kind of sold. You are a slab of meat to them. You know, they want to be able to put a stamp that you were on the, you were in the National Honor Society, National Honor Society person, and that's supposed to make you more worthwhile to society, to employers, to whatever. And so you'll be lionized. Of course, it doesn't bring up the fact that most successful, not most, that many successful people did poorly in school or avoided school or dropped out. Bill Gates, the most, you know, the richest man in the world, he gives tons and tons of money in his foundation to education, mostly for technology and education, which is kind of funny because he profits handsomely off of putting technology in education. This is how Apple Computer eventually first got started, was they were making sweet deals with schools, knowing that if kids learned the Apple Computer in schools, they would be more likely to buy them when they left school. And it only went so-so. It wasn't the great marketing idea that they thought it was. Microsoft is kind of doing the same thing. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gives tons of money to get technology into schools, especially in third world countries, because they come with all kinds of reasons, and they all sound very good. I'd have to say one of the biggest, the ones that are unspoken, are about he wants to sell more software. If he can get these kids accustomed to Microsoft software and using Microsoft Office and stuff like that, they will buy them full price when they get out of school. Or when those people get out of school and they become leaders of the industry, well, just become people out working. You know, the mass drive will be, well, we need to have Microsoft Office because the kids are used to it, or because our workers grew up with it and they feel most comfortable with it. And, you know, it's perpetuating Microsoft. That's the whole point of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is to keep Microsoft going. Now, it works out good for Bill because he gets to, because he still gets the profit off of that stuff, his foundation work. So, anyway, you know, it all comes down to the fact that that what states, what corporations, what the overlords want the most are manufactured people. People that are pretty much like everybody else. People that you can say, yeah, you know, if you do this to people, everybody will react this way. If you throw money at them in an economic stimulus package, for instance, they will go out, spend like monkeys, and we will profit off that. In fact, they will not only spend like monkeys, they will spend more than what you gave them because people tend to. Are they trained to? Well, I won't say they're directly trained to. They're indirectly trained to. They're trained to trust. They're trained to trust their leaders, that their leaders know what they're doing, and as long as they keep doing what they're asked to do, everything will work fine. So, you know, stuff like that. So that's why I brought up way back when the whole idea of people as cattle. I've tried the slave thing. I tried to change it to slaves. That didn't work very well. I still like cattle. Not just because cows like sniffing each other's butts. Although, you know, that's honestly true, too. Or at least from what I've seen in my world, they love following each other. They are herd. They are herd creatures. They love to be together and be in herds. And the stockman uses that proclivity of cows to his own advantage. You know, it's really easy to get cows to go to slaughter if you can do slaughter them in groups. You know, doing them individually can cause some problems. Cows feel much more comfortable in groups, so if you can slaughter them as a group, all the better. Now, you can't really do that particularly, but you can move them as much as you can in groups, and the fact that there's a whole bunch of other cows in there with them calms them. And that's what happens to people, too. If you're going into a death camp and you want to feel a little bit, you know, you don't want to feel bad about, you know, being gassed, the best way to do it is to keep most people jumbled up together somewhat like cows. Because it calms people. As long as if they think they're going through something together, it calms them. Of course, you don't tell them what you're doing, because cows don't have a clue what's happening to them. You know, people can think a bit, although we're trying to breed that out of people, too. The closer we can get to the cows, the more controlled, the more docile they can be. And I come from this stuff. I'm trying to teach my kids not to be so trained, not to be so docile. But also to say, you know what, be careful. Don't come out against the powers that be unless you're willing to take the punishment for doing it. Hopefully I don't. I'm not a good example of that, because I'm sorry. I think my effect on my children in inoculating them against the stockyard mentality is so much more powerful than going out in a blaze of glory in 5 minutes saying, "Down with the state!" and then getting shot down. That's my thing. You know, well, that's fine. You'll get shot somewhere out in the wilderness and nobody will hear about it, because the news media will never talk about it. And it'll never happen. So much better to be quiet and to teach your children to be less indoctrinated than you are. I'm all for that. Now, this is Jay Nemro. I've gotten to my destination. It's time to stop now. I'm Jay Nemro. This is episode number 601. I thought it was a pretty good one myself. But that's always up to you. This is Jay Nemro. Have a great day. Oh, I got to find my pointer. Gosh darn it. There it is.